You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
What are you doing here? You promised never to do this kind of thing again.
I never promised you any such thing.
Not you, you twitter.
I've never seen you before in my life.
Oh, sorry.
Good movie.
Mm-hmm. It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Washman's got a heart.
Make love in a hammock.
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 124 for the 19th of March, 2011.
I think you blew everyone away with that one. Everybody's not quite sure what the hell's going on now.
I think I did. I think that opening clip just kind of freaked everybody out. Not only did it have nudity, it had a rotting corpse in it. Anyway, yes, I Am Ourface has got it right. It's from American Werewolf in London, and there is reason for that clip, and we're going to come back to that in just one second. First of all, I'm David McVeigh, and I am joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm fantastic.
Wonderful to hear. I still have a cold. For those who have listened to Geek Actually will know that I have a cold. And
I still have coffee, which means I'm fine.
I have coffee too, and we're going to do our best to get through this before I collapse in a heap on the ground. This is the
I'm going to try and hold that time for as long as possible so we can watch Dave collapse into a pile, which I think would be fantastic. But anyway.
This is the official movie podcast of the Geek Actually Network, and this week we are going to review the film Battle Los Angeles. And we will also discuss a little film news, including Darren Aronofsky, one of our favorite topics, Conan, Friends with Benefits, and The Yellow Submarine. There you go. That's an eclectic group of things for you to look forward to.
Yeah.
We also have a new list of five, and this week we're going a little bit out there. This list of five has got quotes in it, because our new list of five is five, quote unquote, the aliens are here, exclamation point, movies. So, we will come back to that at the end of the show as well. I do have a little feedback that we are going to get to first. First of all, I have an email from Damon, who says, "G'day, Dave and Josh. G'day, it's Damon here again. Thanks for the shout-out and reading my email a couple of weeks back. No problem. Love email. Thought I'd email my feedback about where to put the film review in the show." If you remember, we're still looking for feedback on that. Well. He says, "You can cast my vote in having a review at the back of the show. I'm happy to listen to you guys spoil and discuss the film in more length and about particular scenes. If I haven't seen it, I found," I found your fast-forward 5 minutes, etc., easy enough to do. Also found this today. Thought you'd be interested if you haven't seen it, which is the Darren Aronofsky story, which I actually had already put it in the lineup, but thank you for sending it through. And do send links through just in case I do miss stuff." And he says, "Thanks, Damon." And thank you very much, Damon, for that email. That's wonderful. That's a few votes. I think, in fact, everybody who has written to us has said put it at the back end of the show.
Yeah, no, I think we've kind of got a general consensus.
We'll leave it open one more week before we make a rash decision. One more week, and then we'll make the decision as to whether it goes at the end or the beginning. My vote, by the way, if I'm going to cast a vote, is I actually liked it at the back end of the show as well. So if that's worth anything, but I think you like it at the head. So
I'm happy with it.
You're happy.
Let's do it.
Last week we had a competition, and we said what was where is it? I've got it here. The lovely pre-owned copy of King Arthur, because we don't give out new stuff because we're cheap asses, as we said before. But it's a lovely, it's in perfect condition copy.
And we like to give it some love before we give it to you.
That's right.
Think about that.
Sexy time. So it's in perfect condition, but it is pre-owned because it's from my collection. I've replaced it with a Blu-ray, and I now have this copy to give away. We had three entries for this one. The question was, what is your favorite Clive Owen film in 25 words or less? And the first one says, from James from Melbourne, he says, "Here is my answer for the recent contest for King Arthur. Favorite Clive Owen film is a trick question. There are no good Clive Owen films."
Nicely done.
And because I disagree with you, you lose.
Aww. Okay, that wasn't me disagreeing, but Dave runs it, so.
Because I think Children of Men is actually a good Clive Owen film.
And we'll leave it at that. Moving right along.
Next one here is from Michael. Michael from Canada, or Mike from Canada, writes, now, before we read any further, if you do remember, we said it was only open to Australians. Okay?
Okay. Yeah.
So he says, hey guys, second time writing in, loved the Rango episode. I got a chance to watch it before I listened, and I think it'll be one of the more creative films this year. Granted, the story's been done before, but I think I read somewhere that a critic referred to Rango as a Tarantino film for kids. Yeah, I go with that.
That's good.
I like that.
Yeah.
I believe he was referring to the mashup of films in the film. Yes, agreed. Now, he does go on and say, best Clive Owen movie. Children of Men. Clive Owen had some great lines, comedy gold, and the scene where he is running out of the building amidst all of the chaos. Also, love any movie that kills Julianne Moore.
Oh, me too, man. Me too.
He then goes on to say, though, guess I'm disqualified, can't fit my explanation under 25 words. I'm also Canadian. Perhaps an honorable mention. That's why I read it.
Oh, right? Absolutely.
So you get an honorable mention for that. Now he goes on and says, in my last email, I asked that you do a list of five films about filmmakers' sophomore films that are superior to their first films in honor of Doug Jones's release of Source Code. And I love listening to your list of five with difficult topics. Yes, we are still keeping that in mind.
We are hanging on to that. We don't want to waste it until the movie actually comes out.
Yeah, I think we're actually going to do that list of five when Source Code comes out. So hold on to that one. Okay. He actually goes on to say, spoilers of my list of five plus one, highlight below. Oh, so he hid them. You have to highlight it to read them, but I'm not going to read them because they're spoilers. And we'll hold on to this email, and when we do this list, we'll come back to it. Okay? Now, last one is from Chris from Brisvegas, who actually writes, Children of Men because the film rocks. He saves the world and spends half the film wearing a pair of thongs with slacks. Win!
All right,
so I'm going to give you that because, yes, I agree. If you can make an action hero run around half the film wearing thongs, it's almost equivalent to Bruce Willis running around barefoot.
Yep.
All right, so Chris from Brisvegas, if you can send me to feedback@geekactually.com your mailing address, your complete mailing address, I will get this copy of King Arthur out to you as soon as I get the address.
Yeah.
Okay? So you are the winner of the competition. Send me your email address and we will send that out to you. Now, why did I show a clip from American Werewolf in London at the head of the show? Because I recently purchased American Werewolf in London on Blu-ray and it looks fantastic on Blu-ray. But I actually have, and this one's actually kind of special to my heart, so you guys have got to really, you know, you got to love this one if you want to do this. But I actually have my pre-owned copy of the 21st anniversary edition of American Werewolf in London. It actually has a little book in it and everything.
Wow, is that?
It's got a proper slip cover, and it's a fold out, and it actually has a little book on the making of the film and all sorts of stuff. So this is a very nice one, and I'm actually sad to see this one go, but you know, I don't need two copies of the movie. So I'm going to offer this one up. It's a perfectly, and I can't get it back, I'll put it back in the cover later. Anyway, it's a perfectly good copy of American Werewolf in London. The disc is in perfect condition, as I said before. So we're going to put it up for competition, and we're going to say in 25 words or less, what's your favorite monster movie? All right, so what's your favorite monster movie? Get those entries in to feedback@geekactually.com. And once again, competition closes 25th of March, next Friday, just before the show, and we'll announce the winner on the next show. So if you want this lovely DVD copy of American Werewolf in London, 21st Anniversary Edition, it is yours for the taking. Now, competition is only open to Australian audience members as before.
Though we would love you to write in because they're funny either way.
Honorary mentions are always taken. But as we've said on the show many times, we only do it to Australian listeners, A, because the disc is a Region 4. And you may have trouble playing it overseas. And more importantly, we're cheap and we don't want to send it overseas. All right. So, there you go. Don't put your answers in the chat room. I am Osface. All right. But save it for an email. Okay. And if your favorite monster movie is American Werewolf in London, that's fine too. Let's move on. What have we been watching this week, Josh?
Let's see. What have we been watching? Well, I went out after getting one of my wonderful sort of like discounted prices at work, went out and got as many of the Japanese horror films as I could find, because I have a confession to make. I had never seen the original Ring. I had only ever seen the remake, and it was one of those films where I just avoided it because people just kept telling me, oh my god, you have to see it. It's crazy, it's amazing, it's so much better and scarier than the original. And I'd like to say straight out the gate, after watching the Ring 1, it's fucking terrible. I'm sorry.
I'm going to concur with you, and I'm going to say that... And do you know what it is? I think it's also a case that I saw the remake first. And the remake is a much better made
film. I can do these things both ways. I have sat down and watched the remake and the original, and I can usually find out why they like it. And I like the way it was shot, and I like what they took from it and made into the sequel. I just think this sequel is a far superior film. A couple of things. Like, as an example, I think it's a very important fact, especially in any day and age now, where we have such a desensitized audience, to make the victims seem a little more gaunt than you would expect. Like, in the remake, they've done a special, that very intense makeup job to really kind of exacerbate the fact that they had been shocked to death.
Yeah.
In the original, all it is people just going
like that. I actually just didn't find the original very scary.
Yeah. Now, in saying that, I also then sat through and went, well, there has to be something to this. So I sat down and watched the sequel, the second one. The second one is a far superior movie and, at moments, incredibly well made. Like, the first one has a really low budget, and it works against itself. Because it's like, for me, it didn't even work as a basic horror movie. I can go back and watch old splatter horror films and stuff like this and still get something out of them. When I watched that, I was like, this would have been scarier if you had to put a bit more effort into it. It's not a scary film. Mm. It's trying to be, but it's just, for anyone that knows anything about horror, it just doesn't have any effect. The remake just made the film as bleak and as horrifying as it possibly could. Mm. There's a lot to take out of the two films, but I still have Ring Zero to watch, which I'm going to watch in the next few days.
I've never actually seen Ring Zero.
Exactly. Now, I've
seen the first two original Japanese Ringus, but I've never seen Ring Zero.
Yeah. So I'm going to sit down and see whether that's any good, but that's my sort of layout
and
of the
actually,
first two
they
films.
And actually, they did a sequel to the American remake, didn't they? Which I never saw this. I never saw the sequel. I was really only interested in seeing Gore Verbinski's remake. And look, spoilers for The Ring, but it's fairly old now, and I'm sure we all kind of know the basic concept, but the scene where she comes out of the TV at the end is so much more horrifying in the American version.
It's so much more detailed is the reality of it. They sat down and went, how do we make this scene work? Look, anyone that says that the movies are the other way around, I'm sorry, but you have so much to try and explain to me, because everything that they did in the there is so much faithful adaptation in the American remake, and on top of that, everything is just done so much better. Like, as an example, the scene where she goes up to the apartment, room where the kids stayed and watched the film, in the remake, it is a dark place. There is a weird sense to it. The entire, it's raining and, everything about the scene is confronting and makes you on edge. Whereas in this, it's a happy, nice...
And there was more depth. There was more depth to the actual actors as well in the American version as well.
To be fair, they also did borrow stuff from the second one into the first one. Kind of, when you combine the two, it really kind of makes a better film. I think that... that it's probably a better film, the original, in almost every aspect of the film. I think they copied it, and you always have to pay heritage to it, but in most cases, I am usually defending the original. In this case, I think it is the complete opposite. I think that we did a so much better version because we had the time, and I think respect paid, because the movie wouldn't exist without the original source material, but I think Gore Verbinski did a
stellar job of that remake. It's really good.
Yeah, and it's already been answered by the chat room, but Ring Zero is the prequel to The Ring, which I haven't seen yet.
Yeah, no, but I haven't either. This week I watched the three Transporter films back-to-back. Nice. Now, for those who have been listening, you know that I've been watching a film a day every day this year, and I have to say that I actually broke the trend, or broke the flow, so to speak. I watched the Transporter 1, and the next day I sat down to, and I have these as original DVDs, sat down to watch Transporter 2, got halfway through the film, and my disc was faulty.
Son of a bitch.
And it just froze up and locked up. I tried it on two different DVD players, and it was just fucked. And I thought, oh, man, and it was already late, and I wasn't going to start another film, so you'll see on my list that there's actually a day break, because I couldn't record the film in all good faith. Even though I'd seen it before, I didn't watch it from beginning to end. So the next day, I immediately ran out, bought myself another copy of Transformer 2, Transporter 2, and then watched Transporter 2 and 3 yesterday together, back to back. And I got to say, watching the films again, it was a very interesting experience, because Transporter 1, I think, holds up the best. Mm-hmm. Transporter 1 is actually a riotous, fun, French-styled action film. I have to say, some of the car chase stuff doesn't work so well today, because you can actually obviously see that it's all been sped up. Mm-hmm. They didn't do that so much in the second one. The second one was a little bit more confidently put together with the car chase stuff. But the fighting scenes were awesome, and it was just a nonstop go-go-go action film. And Statham has a lot of screen presence. Jason Statham has a lot of screen presence.
Yep.
Second Transporter 2, in some ways, is actually my favorite, even though it's actually not as well made. The action scenes are so outrageous that you sit there just giggling to yourself watching it. The scene with the fire hose still just tickles me. And Little Geek walked in while I was about halfway through it and actually looked at a part of it and goes, boy, this is just nonstop action, isn't it? And it's like, yeah, that's kind of the point. There's like you know, four lines of dialogue just to remind you that there is actually a story happening here, and then back to the action. Yep. And that's the way it works. Now, Transporter 3 I've had in my collection for a long time, and I've actually not watched it because everybody told me it was crap.
Yeah.
And so I've been kind of putting it off and putting it off and putting it off, and last night I finally watched it. And I have to say that it's not a great film. Don't hear me out here. Don't disagree yet. It's not a great film, but quite frankly, it is no really that worse than any of the other Transporters in its style or fighting or anything like that. The biggest issue I had with Transporter 3 is too much story. And it sounds weird to say that, but for an established series where we've established the ground rules on nonstop action, to have him stop and have a romance and a love affair and all this story and build-up, and the action scenes are actually fewer than the story scenes, suddenly means it doesn't feel like a Transporter film anymore.
Yeah.
The car chases are better done. Mm-hmm. The fight scenes aren't as good as Transporter 2, but the car scenes are definitely... I mean, there's a couple of car chases in this that are outrageous. But overall, it's the weakest of the three films because it's not as fast-paced. They're trying to give it much more story. But overall, it was fun watching the three films back-to-back again. And I do recommend Transporter 1 and 2 in particular. But like with the review we're going to talk about with Battle Los Angeles coming up, these are disengage brain films. If you go into these expecting story, forget it. You're going to be these are not Die Hard.
Nope.
All right. These are just action films, straight up and up action films. I've watched other things as well, but those were the three that really took the cake this week. I did rewatch. I just thought I'd let you know. I rewatched Social Network.
Yeah.
Still love that film.
Fantastic. I also forgot to mention I watched the original Mechanic.
Oh yes, I thought you were saving that though because.
No. I'm making it clear that I've seen it. I have seen both films now, but we won't talk about that now. But. Yes, interesting situation. I can't wait to talk about it when we actually get to it.
I haven't actually seen the remake yet. I didn't get a chance to get to that screening, so I can't wait till it comes out, and I'll have a look at it. And then we will do... That will actually be a double review day. We'll actually review the original and the remake.
Yeah.
Because so it's rare that we've actually both seen both films. So this time we'll actually be able to look at both films. And we're going to, in that episode, a little bit of a tease for you, but in that episode we're also going to talk a little bit about the whole remake situation and... about studios and their treatment of audiences at the moment. But we'll come back to that in a future episode. I think that's about 2 or 3 weeks away. So that's coming up. All right, so let's get on to our feature film review for the day. Mm-hmm. This week, Josh and I saw a much-anticipated film, actually. We were both really looking forward to it, and that's Battle Los Angeles. And interestingly enough, I noticed in IMDb they've actually changed the name. Now, I don't know what they're playing at because the movie itself just says Battle Los Angeles and the posters just say Battle LA. But if you look at the IMDb listing, it's actually called World Invasion Battle Los Angeles. So I thought that was very intriguing. And then Battle Los Angeles is listed under it as U.S. original title.
Yeah.
So it's very odd that they seem to have changed the title in mid-flow. All I can think is they're planning sequels. And then we'll have World Invasion Battle New York, World Invasion Battle Tokyo, World whatever, you know. So I'm thinking that they didn't plan that in advance, and now they're going, oh, we could probably do sequels, you know. Anyway, directed by Jonathan Liebsman. Now, if that name sounds familiar to you, he directed. Oh, no, I actually had this on screen before, and I've lost it now. Hold on a second. You'll actually be surprised. This comes from a very unlikely source because he's not actually a terrific director. And I'll just bring it up on screen very quickly because I forgot to have this on here. All right. Now, directed by Jonathan Liebsman, as I said, and written by Christopher Bertolini. Stars Aaron Eckhart, Michelle Rodriguez, Ramon Rodriguez, no relation to each other, Bridget Moynihan, Corey Hardrick, I think it's pronounced. God, some of these names, I swear. Can't people just, like...
No.
Get their spelling? Anyway. Gino Anthony Pesci, Neo, the rapper... So N-E-Y-O James Hiroyuki Lee. Oh god, not with a cold, I can't do this. James Hiroyuki Liao.
It's funny, Fisher. Dave, I never thought a movie with too much sort of what is it, variation of different types of people would destroy you.
It's going to destroy me. I apologize to all these people for pronunciations. This next one is the killer.
Yeah.
Adetokunbo, I think it is. Adetokunbo McCormick. And even McCormick is spelled weird. What is it with these names? All right, McCormick, Bryce Cass, and a lot of other TV actors and unknowns that you've probably never heard of before. It's got a large cast. Most of these actors, if none of these names are particularly household names for you, it's because most of them actually come from TV. I went and looked at a lot of their IMDb listings, and a lot of them are TV listings, or unknowns, short films, what have you. Anyway, the director, I was saying if his name sounds familiar, because he directed that quality film, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning.
Oh, wow.
Not even the remake. He did the sequel to the remake. So you got to look into it. Going into this film, you're saying this guy doesn't have a great track record. But he actually pulled it off to a degree, I think. We'll come back to that in the review. The plot is actually simpler than you would think from the trailer, because from the trailer it looks like it's all out warfare, Independence Day. But the plot is actually a group of Marines are sent into the alien-invaded, battle-torn Los Angeles to rescue civilians before a planned airstrike is set to level the city. Problems arise, and you see this in the trailer, so it's not a spoiler. Problems arise when the extraction helicopter is destroyed, and the Marines and the civilians then have to make their own way out of the city. That's basically the plot. So they've narrowed the plot down to one little battalion. One little squad, basically, which is a smart thing to do. I think if you tried to make it on too big a scale, it wouldn't have worked, right? Yeah. So it's a little bit like, and it's going to be weird that I say this, but it's a little bit like Skyline in that sense, the sense that it's a huge invasion, but we really narrow it down to just a small group of people. Skyline sucked. This didn't quite suck that hard. You know what I mean? So, but it's the same concept. We do have a trailer. We'll show you this trailer real quick. We've shown this trailer on the show before. It doesn't have a lot of talking in it, so for our audio listeners, just sit back and enjoy the sound. But it's fairly short, too. So here is the trailer for Battle Los Angeles.
Good Wednesday morning, 94.5 with the Surf Rider Morning Surf Report.
Hard morning, Staff Sergeant! Staff Sergeant!
We now know that meteors will land off the coast of different cities.
They gotta be parallel to the deck. That's the whole thing with these bars.
Okay.
Come on, you guys, you're killing me.
Good luck, rookie.
A small cluster of meteors is predicted to enter our atmosphere.
Scientists are scrambling to try and understand it.
Evacuations are now underway.
Two or three meteors just impacted. Oh my god.
It appears that there's something like shadowy figures.
I think I'm gonna head back now. Everyone needs to get out of here right now. Lucas, if you could just come back, please. Oh my god!
A place for its resources, you wipe out the indigenous population. Right now, we are being colonized.
What the hell is that thing?
Oh my god.
Fall back! Fall back!
How many of you?
Five of us, three kids.
We have civilians coming out!
Can't take them, we got no room!
Wait! Kids!
And there you have it. All right, so that was a trailer for Battle Los Angeles. And Josh, what did you think?
Well, look, I probably went in with the highest expectations out of everyone. I don't know. I have this like inherent belief that when we do these kind of big invasion-style movies, I always think about lots of money involved in the project. And that's the way I always look at it. And I expected a lot more on a sort of larger scale than what we actually got. Like, the movie is much more sort of narrow alleys and, you know, sort of situations happening. There are very few large-scale kind of situations going on as we watch the movie. It is mainly focused around a small team of people. I enjoyed the movie's kind of structure for the first half. I thought that it was an interesting story. It set up the characters well. I liked that it was very different personalities, some of which did clash. So it did kind of create an interesting sort of a system. I didn't expect much depth, and I gave it that. I started to worry about the first quarter mark. I started to notice a similarity that this was written very much like a video game storyline more than an actual film.
It actually felt like I was watching Call of Duty or something.
But the problem is that when you take the actual interaction out of that situation, you also pull the interaction out of the actual flow of the story. So it's like, if you're in that story, you're looking around at the environment, you're looking around for enemies, it becomes a more immersed experience. But when you're doing it as a film, you start kind of looking around going, all we've done is run up and down corridors for the last 15 minutes, wait for bad guys. You know, like, the action just started to kind of grate on me because I felt that there didn't really seem to be a major point to it, and there was no overlying storyline or anything like this. It was like, it was just a military movie about a bunch of people escaping. And I was like, oh, okay, when you say Battle Los Angeles, you really expect it more to be the Battle of Los Angeles, like the Battle for Los Angeles. This was just Battle of 10 or 15 people leaving a city. And that was my first problem with the film. It was kind of like, I wanted this to be a full-scale invasion war. This is actually just a personal story of a bunch of people. Hmm. Like, there wasn't enough about Los Angeles as a set piece. And without going into any spoilers, I felt from there, my problem became the fact that the movie went from what could have been a setup for a great series of films to basically one single film that was basically like Independence Day, but without the worldwide situation. You never really got a sense of anything outside the world apart from a few flashing comments or videos in the background or something like this towards the end of the film. There really was no sense of a scale. It was just a bunch of people running around a burnt down city trying to escape.
See, I so disagree with that. It's interesting. I actually wrote the review for Geek Actually this week, and it's interesting because when I sat down and I started to think about the film, because when I walked out of the film, I kind of went, well, that was pretty empty, you know? But that being said, I went into the film with a certain expectation. I went into the film wanting lots of shooting, lots of explosions, lots of aliens, you know? That's basically what I wanted. I wanted just to be entertained, right? Yep. And I actually got that a lot. I mean, I really quite enjoyed I enjoyed the fact that they actually reduced it down to a more personal level of having just a squad. Yeah. I didn't want Independence Day again. And now, the reason why I say that is because I quite enjoyed Independence Day, but Independence Day has got that whole flag-waving, rah-rah, U.S. is best.
Oh, you know come on. I'm sorry, but if you think
We got rah-rah, Marine Corps is best in this, and we got lots of hoorahs and lots of no retreats, and that I can accept because that's very much the way the Marines are, you know what I mean? And they go in doing their thing. But we also had that slightly more human story. We had the civilians with them. We had the Bridget Moynihan character was actually an interesting character, the fact that she helped him dissect that alien at that one point, minor spoilers. But, you know, and it's like, you sit and go, I kind of like them. I don't think this film would have worked at all. Let me just say right now, I don't think this film would have worked for me at all if it hadn't been for Aaron Eckhart.
Oh, dude, the man is the only thing that kept me watching.
Aaron Eckhart has enough weight to him as an actor that he can get away with that scene where he's talking about losing his battalion, which for me is a really effective scene. And all I can think is that would have fallen flat on its face had you not had Aaron Eckhart. There's enough gravitas to him as an actor that he can hold this together. Yeah. And you can believe him in this role. Everyone else in this film is pretty much expendable. including, unfortunately, Michelle Rodriguez, who I love Michelle Rodriguez, but she always just plays Michelle Rodriguez. Yeah. And that's fine. And she suits kind of playing the military character and all this stuff. But there's no weight behind, there's no meatiness in her role, because there's no backstory to her role. She just kind of shows up and she just does her thing. And she does the Michelle Rodriguez thing, you know?
Yeah.
And that's fine. She plays the sassy Hispanic, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's good. Aaron Eckhart carries the film. All the other members of the platoon, they do an okay job. Even Neo, the rapper, does a good job. That scene at the beginning where they're at the flower shop and the wedding, you know, you sit there and go, well, that's actually, that actually kind of works, you know?
Yeah.
And I had no problem with that. As far as just being a wham, bam, disengage, eat popcorn and just enjoy the film, I actually really had a good time. Mm. I thought it was fun. There's no depth to this film. This film is really what it set out to do. You look at the trailer and you go, it's Marines against aliens in Los Angeles, you know?
Yeah.
That's exactly what it delivers, you know what I mean?
And
that was fine with me.
Again, you're entitled to your opinion. I'm not stepping on that. I actually felt that, like, when I went into this and you find out that there were so many big, like, this movie had a lot of power behind it. Like, we had, who was producing it? We had,
Give me a second.
I forget the company name. But anyway, look, this film was in no way... can you bump the mouse, man?
Yeah.
This film was in no way lacking money or resources or anything like this. But the thing that I found funny is in this day and age, yes, it's all right to have a movie that's just all, you know, sort of shooting and all this sort of death and stuff like that. But it went for me in the last 45 minutes... of the film, it went from being something that I was really looking forward to, even if it was the setup that they're planning for a couple of films. What I wanted was, I wanted the first film to kind of, again, and it's just a personal feeling, I wanted the first film to kind of feel like we were caught off guard. Like, to kind of feel like we had been stumped. We had been slammed by an incredibly hard enemy that is using a resource we have abundances of, and all this sort of thing. And instead of it being kind of America managed to win in the last 5 seconds and now we're going to fight back and win the war and, you know, wipe out the world, I just don't understand. It seems like so much better a plot point if we had lost the first battle. We don't have to, like, completely lose, you know, a victory, but we didn't have to get LA back. I think for us to just go, like, to go from complete despair, and I love the way that it was just, it came down to them getting out of the city, and I was really down for that, because that was what I wanted it to be a focus on. It was like, we may have lost, but we managed to stick together, and we won out as to stay together, and
yeah, but then it wouldn't have been good popcorn fare.
But that wasn't...
Yeah, and that's what they're aiming for.
But it could have been so much more than that, and all it would have been was one segment change. And that's what I'm saying. It could have been a great film, and it was an average film for me.
That's interesting. Yeah. I actually quite enjoy it. I don't think... let me stress again that I don't think it is a brilliant film by any means. But it is a good entertainment. And it's funny because I actually saw the ad for it on TV last night, and I actually went... You know, I looked at my lovely wife Kay and I said, I actually wouldn't mind seeing that again. And I think as soon as I thought that thought went through my head, I went, I enjoyed this film more than I thought I did.
Yeah.
Because I enjoyed the Marine stuff. I enjoyed the combat sequences. It's funny that if I had any major grievance with this film is that there are times in the film, and it's not even all the way through the film, but there are times in this film where the shaky cam was getting up my nose, basically. I wrote in my review that Bourne Identity and Black Hawk Down have a lot to answer for this whole technique. It can be a really good technique for creating a very visceral scene, putting you right there in the middle of the action. That doesn't mean we have to do it on every single shot. They were using shaky cam at the scene where he's jogging at the beginning, and the camera's kind of running next to me. He's sitting there going, I didn't need it here. You know what I mean? This is not benefiting
the
scene.
It's become like a great way to hide your special effects as well. It's like, and that's really starting to annoy me. I actually came out of the film and we were actually joking, me and a couple of other people that have seen it. We were joking about the fact that we all watch the film and yet none of us actually have a clear idea of what the aliens look like. Because there is never a still scene in a close range where you actually get a decent look at the enemies. And it's like, stuff like that actually annoys me, because it's like, you've spent all this time creating these things and to not even give me a good look at them. It just
you
felt...
could, and I agree with you because I actually wanted a good look at them, but you could almost see the filmmaker's point of view where he's saying it's kind of war, the enemy is a mystery, we don't really know them, and to get a good look would kind of spoil, would kind of shatter the illusion of that, you know? But I disagree.
But again,
because I actually felt that
I was actually getting bored in the action scenes because I was just disengaging. It was like, I've played war games, I've seen war movies, I have done these things to death. If you just give me scene after scene of that, I'm just going to get bored. And I was. Look, and this is why I didn't enjoy the film, Dave, is because I felt the entire time through, I'm like, all this is a mindless war film. The problem is, it should be about aliens. It should be about a different kind of combat. But to me, it was like me playing Call of Duty. I've done these scenes. I know how to react to this. And when I play the next Call of Duty, I know it's going to be the exact situation that
maybe
I watched in the last time.
Maybe what they're doing is making a film for all the people who haven't played Call of Duty but want that experience.
But, and this is the thing, I didn't get that though, because the people that I've spoken to that aren't into war films have just been like, I just didn't enjoy it. I just felt it was just fucking nothing but war.
What's really interesting is I was listening to Real Junkies this week. Shout out to the boys at Real Junkies.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because Fox 4649, who was on our Tron special, is actually in the military. Mm. And he was actually saying that, if I'm paraphrasing him correctly, he'll write to me and tell me if I'm wrong, but if I'm paraphrasing this correctly, I think he was saying something along the lines of, it's really interesting because the combat stuff in it was actually more realistic than Hurt Locker. And he was saying, from somebody who's been in the combat zone, he actually really liked the hardware, he really liked the way the Marines were interacting with each other. He said it was all very accurate, you know?
But my problem with that is that they tried to make it so accurate it became too accurate.
Yeah.
It became so little about the guys on that side with the giant mechanisms that shoot giant explosive beams. Exactly. And it just became a standard military fair. They could have been fighting anything in the world and it wouldn't have mattered. It would have been the same thing. Instead of it being a walking turret that they had, these amazing looking walking turrets, it could have just been a dude with a rocket launcher. It wouldn't have mattered. It would have been the same exact situation. And this is my problem. It felt so stock standard, and I wanted an alien film, and it's just I wasn't getting that. I was just getting a military film.
Fair enough, that is fair enough. I'm just looking through the credits here and saying that no, it actually doesn't have a lot of power people behind it. It's Columbia Pictures, but it doesn't seem to have a lot of power people behind it.
Oh, okay, maybe I was misinformed.
There was actually a thought. I think we were talking about it where we'd heard at one point there was a rumor that Lightstorm was actually behind.
Yeah,
some of
no, them. that's the rumor I'd heard.
But it looks like they weren't. It looks like I was looking at the credits before, and it's not. They may have been at one point and pulled out. But $70 million budget for this film, which is actually quite modest for this kind of film. I think they actually made good value for their money. Yeah. I mean, they really did. Some of the visual effects in it are staggering. Some of the big vista shots where the helicopters are coming in over Los Angeles stuff look awesome. I mean, just amazing. And as I say, Aaron Eckhart is just quite brilliant in it. Yeah. He is very good. He really does. He is the heart of the film. Mm. What could be corny crap, he basically manages to make real, which I do admire about him. And I really like Aaron Eckhart. He needs to be a bigger star than he is. And he's a really good character actor at the moment, but he hasn't really cracked A-list yet. And I want to see him crack A-list.
I think he's getting there. I think his role as Two-Face was really that defining moment. Yeah. Like, it was where people just went, my God, that is a brilliant character piece. Mm. And it's like, that's what will get you through into mainstream. It's like, for me, the reason that Joseph Gordon-Levitt changed as an actor was when I first saw him in Brick.
Yeah.
And he just destroyed that character setup that they had for him and created this incredibly intensely interesting person. Mm. And for Eckhart, I felt that he really set that up with Two-Face. It was like he really was both sides of the coin,
absolutely.
And we got to see him be this really evil person, but also this incredibly white knight.
Yeah,
kind
and
of
the first
character.
The first time I ever saw Eckhart was actually in, I want to say Jason Reitman. I think it's Jason Reitman's film, Thank You for Smoking, where he is just superb in that film. But unfortunately, it is a cult film, and very few people have actually seen it.
Yeah, no.
And if you haven't seen Thank You for Smoking, this is the film that set Aaron Eckhart on the map.
Yep.
And you sit there and go, wow, that is some performance, you know? Yep. And it's a great film, too. But yeah, he after this film, I'm hoping he has a little bit more scope. His last couple of films were a little bit underwhelming with No Reservation and the couple of rom-coms that he was in.
So hey, man. As Sean Connery... No, not Sean Connery. I'm trying to think who it was, says, I'm just doing it to pay the bills.
Yeah.
Michael Caine.
Michael Caine.
That's it.
Says he does some films because of the heart and some films because he's got to add an extension to his house.
Exactly. No reservations, man. The guy just needed a bigger house.
He needed a house. All right. So I think the bottom line on this film is that I enjoyed it probably more than I should have. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a good popcorn disengage brain. I actually started my review on Geek Action. If you go back and read that review, I think I started the review with something along the lines of, there comes a time when you just have to disengage and just accept a film for what the film is.
Yeah.
And I think if you are willing to go on that ride and just accept Battle Los Angeles for what it is, it's a lot of fun. And you'll sit there and you'll get, and it's a far superior film to Skyline, which is basically the same idea, but this is much better executed. Mm. It's got some good performances, some great set pieces. That scene in the petrol station with Aaron Eckhart jumping in to take out that drone is fantastic. You know, that's just a great scene. Some good dialogue, some really good hoo-ah military moments, you know. And if you're really ready to just take the plunge and have a bit of fun with it, I think you'll have some fun. And Josh, your final words?
My final words are unfortunately the complete opposite to Dave's. I actually found this movie just really kind of like something I could have accomplished with just spending 2 hours with a video game, and I probably would have got a lot more fun out of it because I would have been interacting with it. I didn't really buy into the characters, though I agree with Dave in the fact that Eckhart was probably the linchpin to making this work. Go and see it if you want some big budget, but don't expect anything from it.
Yeah, don't expect depth. I wrote that in my review, too. I said, if you're expecting depth or deep characters, you're not going to get it. Mm. So don't expect depth. All right? If you just want to be taken for a ride, you'll have a bit of fun with it.
Yeah.
All right. Where are my show notes gone? My show notes have disappeared. All right. Bottom line is, we like to review. I would recommend it to friends.
Eh.
Okay.
That's all you're going to get out of me.
I love that. All right. Richard Linklater, who is a favorite of ours. He did Dazed and Confused. He did one of your favorite films, Scanner Darkly.
Mm-hmm.
He's just looks like he's in the final processes of signing to direct a remake of The Incredible Mr. Limpet.
I've never heard of that film.
I thought you might not have. So I actually managed to round up a little bit of the trailer of the original Mr. Limpet. And this isn't the whole trailer. This is just a small part of it because back in the day, when they used to make trailers, they used to go for about 7 hours.
Yeah.
So this is just an excerpt from the trailer. So here you go. For those who haven't seen The Incredible Mr. Limpet, just picture Richard Linklater remaking this.
Hey, that's Don Knotts, the funny man from TV. You know, Don Knotts.
Who?
Sure. And now Don Knotts stars in a big new color movie as The Incredible Mr. Limpet. Now, you may ask, what makes this Mr. Limpet so incredible? Well, as a man, Limpet's what you'd call a poor fish.
If you paid half as much attention to me as you do those fish, I'd be the happiest wife in Flatbush.
Here, it's just that fish are so bright and cheerful. Beautiful.
Look at him, George. Always drawing into his shell, going off into his fish world.
But as a fish, Limpet is, well, he's incredible.
You are Henry.
Yes, George.
Is there anything I can do for you, Henry?
Well, I wanted to talk to you about my helping the Navy.
You? In the Navy?
And go right to the top level. I don't want to waste any time on red tape.
As a secret weapon, he's incredible, too.
Okay, I think we've seen enough of that.
That's the most bizarre thing I have ever seen.
For those who are listening and didn't get to watch, Don Knotts basically turns into an animated fish and then helps the Navy in their war efforts. When I was a kid, when I was 8, 9 years old, I saw Mr. Limpet, and I actually thought it was a really funny little film. I just can't picture Richard Linklater directing it.
Wow.
Josh looks horrified. Our chat room is basically saying Josh looks horrified.
I can't quite... What was that?
It's a comedy and it's silly and everything else, but LA Times is reporting that Richard Linklater is in talks to remake it. Now, I can only imagine that Richard Linklater will go with his rotoscoped animation technique that he's done before, or possibly CG. And I'm sure we're not going to have Don Knotts, because Don Knotts is no longer whether he's even alive, I'm not sure, but he's not definitely not making movies. I'm not sure. Is Don Knotts dead or alive? I don't know. Anyway, anyway, it doesn't matter because I don't know if this is a film that even should really be remade. But Richard Linklater, I tell you, he's always got a slightly different look on things.
Yes.
So,
but I love that. So,
if Richard Linklater thinks he can do something with it, I'll go for the ride. What the hell? Now, from one slightly odd piece of news to a slightly odder piece of news. Actually, not even an odder piece of news, just a snoozer, really. The teaser trailer to Conan the Barbarian came out this week. And it actually came out, for those who think I'm a little bit late with this news, it actually came out just after we finished recording last week. So we missed it by literally a couple of hours. So we thought we'd throw it into this show. And I got to say, I thought, well, okay, now we finally get a chance to have a look at this new Conan and see what it's like. And we put on the teaser and wow. No, I'll just show you. It's actually quite short. Have a look at this and just tell me if this really inspires you to want to go see it.
This summer, enter the world of the Barbarian.
You are no knight. You are not even noble.
I care not. I live. I love. I slay. And I'm content.
So that really didn't tell us much, did it?
Oh, just that that was just the dumbest thing ever.
So a pile of smoke and some mythical characters
and a line that would have been smoke. And a line that would have been delivered so much better
by Arnold.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm still not sold on Momoa as Conan.
This guy just looks, this film is starting to look like a Twilight version of Conan.
James from Melbourne says, oh dear, Conan with some alt-rock and a love story, no doubt.
Oh, God. I'm getting that same feeling, Calicynthas. This is starting to sound a bit like the Scorpion King
to
me.
That's what I said last week, isn't it? Yes, I'm starting to feel that way, definitely.
Yeah.
No, I'm not impressed by that at all. So I just thought, wow, is that the best you can do for a film that we know it's a remake, we know what the story is, blah, blah, blah. We really got to do better than that.
Yeah.
Anyway, Darren Aronofsky news. We were also excited about his take on the Wolverine. He's pulled out.
And did he give a reason?
No, not as far as I can tell. He's just gone off to work on another film. So he's obviously decided the Wolverine isn't where he wants to go, and he's moved on.
You can kind of understand. I'm getting that feeling that this film is probably going to end up going the same way as the last one, where it's like we all got excited because they started doing all this stuff right, and then people started to bail because the thing just started heading into a producer's wet dream, and I think this is what's going to happen with this as well.
Yeah.
Like, we still haven't quite learned how to handle these films, or at least stand up for them well enough to make them work. So,
With Aronofsky out of the Wolverine, I don't know if I'm actually even interested in it anymore.
Yeah.
So, unless something staggering happens in the production of this, Aronofsky was the only thing that was really dragging me into the Wolverine at this point. I thought this was just an interesting little tidbit of information. This is no news, just a tidbit. Apparently, Edgar Wright was offered to direct an episode of the Walking Dead TV series.
Mm.
Apparently, Frank Darabont actually said, come and direct an episode, and he turned it down because he actually said that he didn't want to be the director to fuck it up. His quote, not mine.
I would have, and I don't think either you or Celine would disagree with me, I don't think he would be the one that fucked it up. We had plenty of fucked up episodes.
I actually would have been
season.
Very happy to have had Edgar Wright come in and infuse some new blood into that thing.
It would have been an interesting experiment.
They called me
Edgar,
out.
If you're listening, man, just give us a call. I'll chat to you and explain all the reasons you should do it.
Absolutely. And I got called out on Real Junkies this week where they basically said, oh, you know, David said he wasn't going to watch season 2 of Walking Dead, and he said he was over it, and he said, you'll be watching it. I never said that. I actually said on the special movie fan cast episode, I actually did say, I will watch it, but they're on final notice with me, you know? I'm just not real impressed with where they've gone with it, so I'll be curious to see where it comes back, but I'm on final notice with it. I thought the last few episodes were really disappointing, but anyway. We can all sigh a sigh of relief. Robert Zemeckis' mocap remake of The Yellow Submarine has been pulled.
Great.
He's
I'm happy.
he's apparently run off to lick his wounds, but after Mom needs mom, sorry, no, what is it? Mars needs moms.
Yeah.
Failed at the box office.
Oh, really?
Yeah, funny that. After that failed, Yellow Submarine was backburnered, basically. They basically Sweet. Pulled the plug. And the last I heard, Zemeckis is even considering coming back and doing a live-action film. He said he'd never do a live-action film again, so never say never. Mm. And now I've got another trailer for you. Now, this one, I know you guys, on the most part, my audience is pretty geeky, and they don't like romantic comedies and all that sort of stuff. And everybody goes, oh, chick flick. But I got to play this trailer for you, because Natalie Portman did that kind of
No Strings Attached,
and yeah. You know, the trailer was kind of funny. And now suddenly Mila Kunis, her co-star of Black Swan, has suddenly turned around and done another kind of adult Grown Up No Strings
She's
Attached.
She's trying to be Natalie Portman now.
And just kind of in theme with the film, isn't it? Mm. But interestingly enough, her co-star is much more interesting in this, because in the Natalie Portman one, she had Ashton Kutcher to work from. Mila Kunis gets Justin Timberlake. And so I just thought I'd show you.
All right,
it's a trailer. This is actually basically a first look trailer, they say, called Friends with Benefits. So it's pretty much the same plot. But let's have a look at this trailer.
I just feel like we should chill for a while.
I think we should take a break.
You're breaking up with me?
It's not you.
Of course it's me.
It's me. I don't like you anymore. You said that I was your soulmate.
I did? When?
When we were at that bed and breakfast having sex.
You know, that doesn't...
That doesn't what?
Count.
I'm done with the relationship thing.
I'm emotionally unavailable.
I'm emotionally damaged.
You know what I'm saying?
No emotions, just sex.
So I guess we should just start.
Bedroom.
What's wrong with the couch?
The bedroom has better light. And since we're just friends, I don't have to be insecure about my body.
Come on, you're beautiful. You have nothing to
be insecure. That sounds emotionally supportive. Lock that down.
Your ass is a little bony.
Much better.
I can work with that.
Okay. Should be fine.
Whoa!
Mom!
I don't know what you're doing. I can't see you putting on your black underpants. Jamie, baby, I missed you. Oh, baby. Ah, did your boobs get bigger?
It's just sex.
That never works.
Nah, you don't get it, bro. Jamie's different.
She's no different.
What do you know about women? You're gay.
But the offers still keep rolling in. Naturally, look at me.
Come with me to L.A. You'd be a great distraction for my family. They'll love you. All fast-talking and brusque like I'm bringing home a carny.
Are those braids?
Yeah, he was going through a crisscross phase.
I can't believe you used to like them.
I didn't like these guys. I don't even remember. Don't try to compare us to another bad little fat. I'm the man in a bag. Give you something that you never had.
How close can we get to the sign?
This is it.
All right, come on.
No, wait. They take this seriously.
Pussy! Are we getting too old for this?
Sex?
Casual sex. You just feel so collegey.
Oh, I could sing some Third Eye Blind.
Okay.
Closing time. One last call for alcohol.
That's not Third Eye Blind.
I'm pretty sure that's Third Eye Blind.
Nope. I know.
You have a boat?
I live in Jersey, and I ain't taking no ferry. Unless it's out to dinner and a show. Bam!
I gotta stop buying into this Hollywood cliche of true love. Shut up, Katherine Heigl, you stupid liar!
I think I messed it up.
It seems you're really into this guy. Do you want some motherly love advice?
Mom! What are you doing?
I'm the princess, and Aubrey's my bad little pony.
Never done this before?
This is the LAPD.
I told you!
Get down now!
Get down!
A fear of heights.
Why would you come up here?
You called me a pussy.
Sir, this is your last warning.
They actually wrapped you in a foil blanket.
Oh my god, that's good.
Oh, I gotta see that again.
Woody Harrelson's the best thing in it. I mean, when he says, I'm not gonna take the ferry unless I'm taking them out to a dinner and a movie.
Look, I am a huss face is asking, why are these films so popular? Because everybody wants to, you know, believe that there is an alternative to true love, and the easiest way to do that is to make films about how funny it is to just have sex regularly with someone that, you know, doesn't do that for you. But yeah. Then it turns out that you do love each
That's
other,
right.
And then
and
it becomes
that,
this whole thing.
It's that whole romantic comedy, you know, life is better when you do find that true person for you, blah, blah. That's what the people
yep.
like.
Rom-coms,
you know?
Right.
Rom-coms.
Yep. But I will say there were some funny lines in it. Apart from that, I'll think
You'll
about it.
You'll miss out on it. I'll end up watching it because my wife loves rom-coms.
Great.
So I'll let you know after I've
yeah.
seen it, okay?
Let me know whether or not
I still want to see No Strings Attached. I never got a chance to see it. All right. Zack Snyder, I'm glad he clarified this finally. Zack Snyder says his Superman movie is not related to any other Superman movie. Okay, thank you for that, Zach. We kind of figured that already, didn't we?
Wow, congratulations. Was that a Twitter statement, or was this like an actual thing he came out and...
Well, Slash Film had the story, and he was interviewed... where was he interviewed? He was interviewed in the LA Times. And he basically came out with a couple statements, and he said he wanted to make his Superman basically standalone, much like the Dark, much like Batman Begins. It's a new film. It's not related to any of the previous films. It's its own beast. Take it as its own beast. Yet he also said it was not an origin story. And yet this week, Kevin Costner confirmed that he is Pa Kent, and we also had Diane Lane as Ma Kent. And you know, and I don't know, something stinks in DC at the moment, and I'm not sure what it is. So,
yeah.
So I'm getting less and less and less and less excited about a new Superman film. However, the one phrase that did come out of this is he actually said, our Superman, he's got things to figure out, but he's a physical cat.
Mm.
Which means he's going to hit somebody.
Well, hopefully we'll, yeah.
So hopefully we won't get the soul-searching Superman Returns again, you know, with the super stalker floating around outside her house looking up her dress with his x-ray vision. You know?
Yeah, no, let's not do that again.
It's just kind of creepy in every way. All right, well, that brings us to the end of news, and that brings us to our list of five. And our list of five this week is in relation to Battle Los Angeles, but it was just too easy to say alien invasion. So instead we've said five, quote unquote, the aliens are here. Movies.
Films, right, yep, yeah. Okay.
So basically, films about aliens coming, all right?
Yep.
So you can get started because I haven't got my iPad yet.
All right, well, my number five is the most obvious choice in the world, and it got bumped down and down and down because it was obviously the first thing that came to mind, but I couldn't knock it off the list because the reality is when it comes to movies about alien invasions, it's just the one that you go to first, which is... Independence Day.
Course.
Independence Day is still one of, and I don't give a crap what anyone says, it's still one of the greatest alien invasion movies we have ever had.
I love Independence Day.
It's stupid,
cheesy.
It's Americanized, it is flag-waving, but I don't care because whole cities get leveled, and that's what
and that
you
shot,
want.
That shot in New York where you see that beam come down and just take out that entire skyscraper
yep.
in one go is just awesome.
Oh, dude, absolutely. And you know what? It deserves its place at number five.
All right. Very good. My number five, I'm going for something slightly obscure. 1956 film directed by Fred F. Sears called Earth versus the Flying Saucers. Now, before you jump up and down and say, oh, God, cheesy 50s sci-fi, this was actually a really good one
yeah.
and really good special effects, all stop-motion effects in it by Ray yeah. Harryhausen.
Yeah.
This was like one of his few sci-fi films, and it was a lot of fun with the little stop-motion UFOs and the whole bit. Full-on Independence Day for the 1956.
Nice.
So there's my number five. Your number four.
So what year was that again?
1956.
1956.
Yep.
All right, I'll have to get that one off you, that name off
yeah.
you later on. I can't remember. I'm actually furiously trying to scroll through this to try and find out the year because there were two of them. But the more recent, and I will hopefully have the answer to which one it is, The Body Snatchers.
Oh,
I've seen
yeah.
both, and I have to say that I much preferred the remake.
Oh, which has been about five remakes of this one, actually.
Yeah, here it is, 1978.
Thank you very much.
1978, The Body Snatchers with Donald Sutherland.
My number four is also Invasion of the Body Snatchers, 1978.
It's just, you know what it is? That sound and the pointing, it just...
Absolutely.
It just
that film
creeps
is
me out.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the most recent remake was just called Body Snatchers, but the 78 version used the full title from the original 50s film,
yep.
which is Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which is directed by Philip Kaufman, who went on to do things like The Right Stuff
yeah.
and stuff like that. Great film. Really
yep.
good. Fantastic. So Donald Sutherland, Brooke Adams looking absolutely
Leonard
hot.
Nimoy's in
Leonard
that as well.
Leonard Nimoy is
yep.
in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Great film.
Yep.
Seen it many, many, many times. The 1950s version was basically an analogy of McCarthyism.
Mm.
And that whole, you know, becoming one and all this sort of stuff. Whereas Philip Kaufman took that side of it
yep.
out and just made it about pod people.
Yep.
And it was great stuff. Really good film. All right, so that's my number four as well. So your number three.
My number three is the absolutely amazing film, which basically put me on Guillermo del Toro's immediate like high point, and this guy was the director I will watch for the rest of my life, which is Men in Black.
Absolutely.
Men in Black is, and I had to think about it because it is technically about alien invasion.
No, it is. Hold on. Did you say Guillermo del Toro?
Oh, sorry, wait, no.
Oh. Oh, you had me sucked in there for a minute there. No. It's directed by the guy who directed Adam's Family.
That's it.
Give me a name, people. I've got a cold. My head's all blocked up. Oh, God, it almost there.
Trying to think.
Barry Sonnenfeld.
Help me, somebody.
Barry Sonnenfeld, I think it is.
Yeah, anyway, we can look that up as we go on. As a movie, just fantastic. Like, it gave you everything that was cool, that kind of 1950s kind of weird, completely unnecessary looking aliens and everything like that. But it also just gave you that great insight into the world and the fact that it was all just kind of...
Yeah, Barry Sonnenfeld.
Barry Sonnenfeld
directed the Addams Family and Addams Family Values. He was actually a DOP turned director.
Yeah.
A really good DOP. And, of course, Men in Black is produced by Spielberg. Great film.
Spielberg. That's one thing. Yeah. It's produced by Spielberg.
By Spielberg, based on the graphic novel.
Yeah.
And it's really, really good. I love the first Men in Black. The second Men in Black is a little bit weaker. No doubt.
I would
about
go
it.
Further than just a little bit weaker.
They are actually working on Men in Black 3 at the moment, apparently. I don't know. I think you should just leave it alone.
Just
at this point.
Number one was just such a standalone piece. It didn't need more explanation than that, but it had just the right amount.
And one of my favorite lines where he's picking up the daily newspaper and he's picking up all of the rags.
Yeah, rags.
And, he goes, "Really? You're picking up those?" He goes, "Best investigative journalism on the market." I love that. National Enquirer, Weekly World News.
All the great ones. All the ones that are obviously so good.
Yes, it's really good. I really like that film. Yeah. I actually didn't put that on my list. Funnily enough, I forgot all about it. My number three, though, is Steven Spielberg related. In fact, directed by Steven Spielberg, which is, of course, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Mm. Because we didn't specify it was Alien Invasion, we just said aliens are here.
Yeah.
So I felt, well, the aliens are here. And Close Encounters of the Third Kind, 1977 film, I think is a terrific Aliens Have Arrived film. And if you haven't seen it, it's time to go back and revisit. Cool. Or if you have seen it, go revisit. If you haven't seen it, go see it. Holds up today. I actually own a copy of it, watched it not long ago. Still a great film. And one of the great performances by Richard Dreyfuss. Mm. Really, really good stuff. Yep. Your number two.
My number two is going to spin you a little bit. But you know what? I do hold it up just the way I hold up any of these other movies. My number two is Plan 9 from Outer Space. That film is just brilliant. And you know what? It stands as an absolute testament to just how low you can go with filmmaking and still make it incredibly entertaining. I think the plot is lost amongst everything that is the rest of that film, the stock footage. No matter how many times I watch this film, I get a genuine sense of enjoyment, a genuine sense of just absolutely having a ball with it.
Yes.
And you know what? That, in my opinion, puts it really high up on my top level.
It's a trashy film, but it's fun. It's fun because it is so trashy.
Oh, absolutely.
My number two, you've already covered, is Independence Day. Mm-hmm. I think Independence Day stands as one of the great alien invasion films. Yes, it's cheesy, as you said. Yes, it's flag waving. Yes, it's everything else. But do you know what? It's so much fucking fun.
Oh, dude. Yeah. It's just, you never get sick of watching
it. No, absolutely not. You sit there, and when the big flag-waving moments happen, you can't help but sit there and go, yeah! And let's face it, Will Smith punching the alien and going, welcome to Earth! I just love that.
Oh, brilliant.
So, yeah, Independence Day, I think, and probably my second favorite Roland Emmerich film out of all of his films. My first would be Stargate. But anyway, your number one. I've got to warn you, I got some honorary mentions on this list.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. My number one is a film that doesn't deserve its place on my list, but I just love it that much. And look, I mean, it's trashy, but it's a thing of my generation, and it's really a thing of its era. A lot of people that will watch it will just be like, you're kidding, right? You would put this at number one. But The Faculty is a fucking great film.
I don't care
what anybody says. It has all your major stereotypes. It has them all working against themselves as stereotypes. Yep. It's got Elijah Wood in probably one of the only roles where he doesn't piss me off. And then you've just
got the hot blonde taking her clothes off at the end.
Exactly.
You know?
And you also have, what's her name? Famke Jensen.
Oh,
playing
Famke
the hot
Jensen,
teacher.
Yeah.
And it's, just, there's
and
so much to love.
It, Robert Rodriguez rocks, you know, quite simply. He just rocks. And it was at a time when, what's his name? Williamson. the writer who wrote Scream.
Yeah.
He also wrote The Faculty. And you sit there and he was right on a roll at that time.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And it was that really kind of generic kind of teen...
Kevin Williamson. That is his name? Kevin Williamson, yeah.
The teen... It was that real teen-esque kind of a storyline. And it was, you know, it was all about, you know, being at school and, you know, sort of all... It was just...
It was about teen... Just, it was teen alienation.
Yeah.
Taken literally.
Yeah. No, and I loved it because it still keeps that same kind of mentality, like the sports team being taken over and they're all the same kind of a personality. It's like, well, it is. It's just all of the freaks and geeks and weirdos conglomerating together to beat alien invasion. And you know what? That's awesome, in my opinion.
Damn
that is
straight.
Exactly. If you haven't seen that film, please go get it.
And my number one, I'm surprised, didn't make your list, actually. My number one is District 9.
Oh, man. You know, my problem was I was really trying to avoid the stereotype.
Yeah, I just couldn't pass it up, though, because District 9 is such a good film. I mean, it is just an awe-inspiring film with made on the smell of an oily rag and yet doesn't look like it at all. And that is how you stretch a budget and make it look amazing. And quite frankly, it gave us Charlton Copley, and any movie that can give us Charlton Copley will forever be remembered.
When?
Now, I actually have a couple of honorary mentions, and one of them I had to mention. It almost made my list at number one.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I actually pulled it from the list, and I thought, no, I really shouldn't. It's just silly. But one of my honorary mentions is 1985's Life Force.
Yeah.
Because, let's face it, it is about alien invasion. They happen to be vampires, but it's an alien invasion.
Saw it, and I knew it was going to be on your list, which is why I avoided it. I was like, dude, it's not going to happen.
It is so shockingly bad, but God, I have fun watching that film.
Dude, it's like Plan 9. It's like you watch it just to be reminded of how not to make a
film.
And
if you haven't seen Life Force, it is highly recommended viewing.
From both of us?
Yes, absolutely. I actually put in my honorary mentions Steven Spielberg's remake of War of the Worlds, 2005. If it wasn't for the last 30 seconds of that film, I would give it much higher ratings. But that last 30 seconds really hurts that film. Yep. But the aliens themselves are cool. The red mist is cool. The red vines are cool. The death of destruction, it's different for a Spielberg film, and I quite liked it. I also put the 1951 film The Day the Earth Stood Still. Not the crappy remake, but the original 1951 film was probably the classic Aliens Are Here movie. It's a tale of warning, basically. And I had another one that almost made my list because it's just such an odd one, but it was actually a film, 1988 film called Alien Nation. Which I really enjoyed, and they actually turned it into a TV series, and the TV series was all right. But the original film had James Caan and Mandy Patinkin in it, and basically it's a cop film. But basically aliens have come to the planet, and they have been integrated into society, and the film is about two cops tracking down a crime, and one cop is an alien and one cop is a human. And it's instead of having things like Chinatown, they've now got like Alien Town, and there's alien ghettos, and it's just really clever. It's a really clever
similar
film.
Kind of thing to District 9 in some
a
way.
Little bit, yeah. It kind of predates District 9 by a good decade and a half, but it's but the aliens are humanoid.
Yeah.
They're just kind of alien looking. They've got like bald heads and stuff, so they integrate better into society. And they've been given all the rights as people, so they've taken normal jobs and everything else. And the aliens are all given names because their alien names are of course unpronounceable. And they're, one of the jokes of the film is that Mandy Patinkin's alien is actually named Sam Francisco. And James Caan actually says at one point, he goes, "Were they getting punchy by the time you got there?"
That's great.
It's a good film. It's well worth having a look at. Once again, the ending lets it down a little bit. It's actually quite a solid film up until its last probably 10 minutes, and it lets it down a little bit. But it was good. Callicent said Mars Attacks. I almost put that on my list.
The only reason I didn't actually put it on my list, dude, was because to put it on the same list as Plan 9 kind of takes away from what Plan 9 is, because essentially, you know, Mars Attacks is basically them just trying to make a full-blown version of...
Excellent. Absolutely. Yep. Mars Attacks is a horrible movie, but I can't help watching it. That's because I don't think it actually is a horrible movie.
Yep.
Mars Attacks is meant to be bad.
Yeah.
The whole thing is, it's a movie based on bubblegum cards.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Tim Burton set out to make. And I think he actually pulled that off quite well. It's an abstract, surreal, bizarre film in places.
Yeah.
And you're right. I actually, whenever it's on, I can't help but watch it. Because the aliens are just out of their minds. I just love these little aliens running like... You know? So there you go. There's some films for you to catch up with. Some of those you would have seen. Some of them hopefully are things you might want to catch up with for future reference. But we are going to finish up here today because my cold is starting to run me into the ground. If you agree or disagree with anything we had to say today, you can send your emails to feedback@geekactually.com or drop us a voicemail at 02-8011-3167. And do remember that you can also Skype that if you don't want to pay the fees, and the Skype ID is Geek Actually. I just want to say really quickly before we finish up, there was something I was going to say, and I'll keep going because I've now forgotten what it was. Michael, see? Tell you. Head feels like cotton wool. Get our merchandise, join our fan page, follow us on Twitter, follow our Tumblr accounts, do anything you want. Any links that you might want to try and find, we are not hard to find.
No, we are everywhere.
We are everywhere, and you can do all of that by just
shamelessly plugging ourselves.
Just go to geekactually.com, and there is a button on the very edge of the screen that says follow us, and it'll pop up a pop-up that'll actually have all of our various addresses, so we're not hard to find. For our tech and general geekery, you can listen to our other podcast. We do we record both shows back-to-back. You'll often hear us refer to Geek Actually. You can find it on iTunes, search Geek Actually, or just find it on geekactually.com. Now, we are on a bit of a drive again, so I'll just throw this out really quickly. If you do grab your podcasts from iTunes, please take a second just to give us a rating or a review. I am calling out in particular anybody who uses U.S. iTunes. If you are a U.S. listener, please drop us a review or a rating because they're different in different stores. And we're really trying to get the stats up on the U.S. account, okay? And I just wanted to say, we didn't say it at the head of the show, but we did at the head of the Geek Show, so we really should put it out here. Our thoughts and best wishes do go out to everybody in Japan. They've been really suffering over there with these earthquakes and tsunamis, and we really want to just say that we are listening to the news and we are really paying attention to what's going on to you guys. And anybody who listens to this show, if you don't know already, if you go to iTunes, there is a link on iTunes that will actually put a donation directly to the Red Cross. Yeah. iTunes takes no cut from that. Apple takes no cut from that, I should say. They've just made it a simple way of donating. And everybody, I think the death toll at the moment is well over 5,000 at the moment. They really are hurting over there. So everybody should give something. Little Geek has yelled at me because I didn't promote him in the Geek Actually show, and I will promote him right now. If you go to youtube.com/NickyMcVeigh, or you can go to www.nickymcveigh.com, you can actually check out his YouTube videos. He does a lot of Lego animated films, and they're getting really good. So go check out some of those. We also want to make sure we do give a shout-out to our friends, the Real Junkies, R-E-E-L, Real Junkies podcast, which you can find on iTunes or go to weekendronin.com. They are another movie review podcast like us, but they do it while drinking tequila, so it can often get very interesting. And, of course, Fox 4649 was on our Tron special. He's one of he's a quarter of the Real Junkies. Shout out to Rachel over at the Funky Film Show Thursdays on Radio Fremantle 107.9 FM, or you can listen to the episode later by going to radiofremantle.com. And it's interesting because she completely disagreed with us about Rango, so you can go have a listen.
She hated Rango, huh?
Yeah, she hated Rango, hated it. But her co-host really liked it, so made for an interesting show, just like today with us.
Yep. Best kind of shows is when everyone disagrees.
Absolutely. I love differencing of opinions. All right. Remember, we do have a chat room, and you can watch this show live. It's every Saturday. We start the recording day at 12 p.m.-ish, which is Australian Eastern time, which for the American listeners, of course, because the international dateline is actually Friday evening, go and check those times out. UTC plus 11 at the moment, but it's going to become UTC plus 10 because daylight savings is going to be ending soon. I'm all confused about daylight savings. It's too hard. Josh, I believe there's another podcast people should be listening to.
RawDLC.com is the website to go to if you're looking for it on iTunes. DLC Live is the show itself. That goes out at 8 p.m. on Tuesdays. If you want to come in and join us live, we have a very active chat room usually. But yeah, come check us out. Come check out the website as well. There's a lot of stuff up there. We've chucked up a whole bunch of videos and new reviews and stuff like this. Head over there and check it out.
I'm just curious, in our chat room, Delta Knight has just put 16,000.
What was 16,000?
What does 16,000 mean? Anyway, he'll get back to us. Tell us what 16,000 means, please. All right, one more shout-out, and then we'll stop all this patting each other on the back business. just a quick shout-out to our cartoonist, Josh Spencer, who did our cover arts. He does great work, and you can check out his artwork over at attackninja.blogspot.com. And because she's in our chat room, I'm also going to do a shout-out to Celine Roberts and her wonderful art. Do you like art? Go check her out at godhaspinkhair.com and find out where she is doing galleries and stuff at the moment, because her artwork is fantastic.
And everywhere.
And everywhere at the moment, absolutely. All right, now, we finish the show by using a little bit of music, usually something from a film score, something like that. And has he... Oh, 16,000 dead in Japan. Oh my God, the number's gone up.
Wow.
Like crazy. Wow. Yes, our heart goes out to you people. Please, stay safe if you are still going. You know what I mean? Wow, that's terrible. All right, back to our show, though, for a second, and say that we are going to finish the show today with a little bit of Brian Tyler's score to the film Battle Los Angeles. That's for our audio listeners. Our live listeners won't get that, unfortunately. But our audio listeners, the music you'll be hearing coming up is a little bit of the Brian Tyler score from Battle for Los Angeles. And I'm going to say thank you, chat room, for hanging around with us all day. Thank you, Josh, for joining me another week. Thank you for bearing with me through my cold.
It's always fun.
It's always fun. Thank you to our listeners. Thank you to everybody out there. Go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we'll see you all next week. Bye now.